runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 871, Incident Management with guest Gila Fish, recorded Friday, January 27th, 2023. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Gila Fish, who is a senior DevOps engineer at Wix with 15 years of experience in the tech industry. She's an AWS community builder, a public speaker who believes the DevOps culture is what drives a company to perform at its best, and talks about that and other DevOps and infrastructure topics at various conferences, including this one. We're here at NDC London, and mostly a dev show, but when I think about incident management, it's more of an ops problem. Right.
It is, but in my experience, I've seen a lot of incidents that only dev could handle.
Right.
So I would say that incident management is the business of everyone, yeah, and not only the ops one.
Well, I mean, the DevOps message is we're all here to provide value to our customers, whoever that may be, whether we're writing code or we're operating systems. It's still the same goal.
Exactly.
I've always been a big advocate, having spent time on in operations, with having devs available on call. Because they often have insight into the application behaviors that we can't see from the outside.
Exactly. I mean, not only because the error logs is not always exactly what I need in order to understand what's going on.
Sure.
But also because not all the flows are very, you know, straightforward. Maybe mm-hmm. I need to only speak to them in order to understand how in this scenario it talks to this, but in that scenario it goes to a different flow. So
right.
I need their inputs in order to understand what's going on and to fix the issue.
I also learned very early on, don't let that guy do any code. Right. There's no chance during a firefight that adding code to the equation is a good idea.
Nope. Nope. That's why there is a word for it. It's called a patch.
Yeah.
And once everyone is on board and say, okay, in the middle of the night, it's okay to do a patch. Mm. And then once we are fully right with our minds,
yeah,
we're out of the fire. Yeah, and we are after a cup of coffees, then we can sit and code the permanent fix.
Right. So maybe we might even have to roll that patch back and then apply the full version,
exactly,
whatever that may be. Your talk, though, focused, I think, very much on the sort of communication side of things, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the issue I run into more often than not is, when do you know you're even in an incident? Or how do you even say, is this an incident?
So that's exactly the thing. Not all pages that you get are incidents.
Yes.
It becomes an incident if there's a potential loss or an actual loss of data, revenues, customers, reputation, these kind of things.
So risk of loss is the measure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I think about it, you know, are we down? Like I remember being in a situation where the folks couldn't tell if the site was up or down or not because they're inside the network. So it may well have been working for them, but the gateway was out. And so the rest of the world couldn't touch it.
Like, so that's why, yeah, usually there are monitoring systems that helps you sample the site from outside of the world.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe it works internally, but not externally. So.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Just to get to the answer of, we know we're down. We know how we're down. Because in the end, most of these incidents, in my experience, it's all diagnostics. The fix is usually clear.
Exactly.
Once you actually know what the problem is.
That's actually one of the things that I covered in my talk, mm-hmm, is to have a structured process, or how I know the word framework, but I didn't thought of using it as instead of process. So
right,
it is a good word to use in that context. It's a structured framework, mm-hmm, in order to manage incidents. So the first question that you need to ask yourself in order to manage the incident is, do I know and understand the full extent,
right,
of the incident?
Yeah.
Because if not, I need to gather more information. Maybe I need to do escalation, but that will be the reason that will help you to understand if you're in an incident or not,
mm-hmm,
and what kind of measures you need to take in order to fix the issue. Because if it affects only a few people, then probably not that critical, but
right,
if the extent is much more extensive, then you need to do something else.
Yeah, it might be an outage for the user. I mean, I've seen people start to freak out that the site is down just to find out that the person calling in had their ISP go down.
Yeah. Right?
And they were like, they're blaming us for something that's completely local to them.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, it's always hard not to immediately try and take action like that. I mean, heck, I've done enough meantime for me to go, should we just reboot the servers and see what happens next?
It is. I mean, this is what I call like prioritizing root cause analysis rather than surface level symptoms. Mm-hmm. Because in the middle of the night, it is easy to, if you got an alert of a service on a server that goes down, it is easy to go to the server and just start the service and go back to sleep.
Right.
But we, at least me as a DevOps engineer and other system engineers, we care about the system's stability and health.
Yeah.
So if I would just start the service, maybe there is an underlying issue that is there and I need to uncover it in order to make sure that the system is really stable or not. So it doesn't really help to just start the service. We need to understand why the service stopped in the first place.
On the other hand, we're not making money until I restart this service. So there's a pretty strong pressure to start it and then maybe do some diagnosis.
Sometimes that's the thing. You need to assess the situation.
Right.
If you are in a downtime, maybe the server is one out of many. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it got stopped, it doesn't affect the others because load balancer would take it out of the equation and that's it.
Right.
And then you have time to investigate.
Yeah.
But
and that's part of the assessment. But that server's out and it's unhappy, but we're not down. The business is running.
Exactly.
Don't get it back in the pool right away. We have an opportunity now to diagnose it in the state that knocked it out.
Definitely. But a lot of people in my career, I found that they don't invest the time
all I
want to
do is make all the red lights turn off.
Exactly. And I'm like, it's not. No, please try to investigate because this is what we need to do. We need to make sure that, hey, now this service on that server stopped, but maybe it will happen on another server because if we don't investigate, we don't know what's the root cause.
Sure.
And we don't know if it's a chain reaction or not.
Yeah. If I had the time, I'd almost be tempted to like make a copy of the VM in that state, right? Like snap a backup now. So that we could go back to the same state anytime we wanted.
Exactly.
Even when we start working on it so that we have a reproducible opportunity.
There. Yeah.
If you have the time. I mean, I always enjoyed the diagnostic part, but I think it's my personality doesn't get too stressed. Like, well, it's all right. We're going to work through this. You take your time. The most likely thing we're going to do if we move quickly right now is cause more harm.
Yeah.
So let's, be patient, move slowly and do the right things. But not everybody reacts that way.
I actually, told a story during my talk about that. Because my talk also covered like the qualities or the traits that an incident manager should have.
Mm-hmm.
So of course there are a lot of qualities, but one of the qualities that I chose to highlight was operate under pressure.
Yeah.
And then I told a story of when I, there was one of my previous companies. I started out, I was there for a month and then I joined the on-call rotation and on my first on-call rotation, the first incident was a very big one, like 100 alerts on pager duty. So I'm like, okay, let's understand what's going on. Of course, I had a buddy. I called my buddy and he was 2 years in the job. I told him, let's sit and understand what's going on. And then we sat together. I started explaining for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, what I already checked.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to the screen. I haven't looked at him.
Right.
And then I said, okay, now.
What do you think?
What do you think? What do we need to do? And then silence. Silence. I didn't hear any response. And then I looked at him and he said, and he was shocked.
Yeah.
He was totally shocked. And he looked at the screen and he was like, so many alerts. So many alerts. I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Snap out of it.
Come here.
Yeah. Snap out of it. It doesn't help anyone. Snap out of it. You're here enough time. You should know. Okay. All good. And then we started investigating and all was good. So pressure is an issue, but that's the thing. If pressure is a symptom of being out of control.
Right.
And if you know your systems, if you know the flows of the application, then you have enough information to be in control. And then it should reduce the level of stress that you're in.
It speaks to how hard it is to onboard someone into industry response too, because it's not just here's what we have, but also here's how it fails.
Yeah.
That experience part is this, there's always the experienced old person in the back room. It's like, it's that cranky server again. Just kick it on the left side.
Yeah.
It'll come back.
So that's why I'm always advocating for documentation.
Right.
Not only on your day-to-day, but also for incidents. So writing run books, writing on-call shifts handoffs to understand what did I experience in my shift that could help my team members prepare for their shifts later on? If I had recurrent issues, if I had false positive alerts that I had to suppress for now and fix later. So all these kind of things and this kind of documentation could help onboard people to do incident management.
In some ways, being remote where everybody's talking in a Slack channel is like a natural documentation chain for that. But how do you normally like to document an incident?
So for the on-call shift handoffs, we did do it in Slack because it is somewhat temporary because what I experienced now not necessarily being relevant for next month or 2 months. Mm-hmm. So if there are stuff that are relevant, like I can derive runbook instructions from what happened, then I will create a runbook and then this will stay for long. But if these are things that just I suppose this alert or this was a recurrent issue. It's temporary. You know,
right.
It's just for now.
But you do have to make that effort to copy it back out of Slack and into something a little more permanent, like a, Jira ticket or something.
Exactly. That's also what I'm saying, that if you found out stuff that you should cover in order to prevent the next incident from happening or stabilize the environment, open a Jira ticket to handle it afterwards.
Right. And make that permanent record.
Yeah.
The main thing I think is that you need all this stuff for the retrospective eventually, like to go back and say, how are we actually going to improve things? Not that we managed to put out that fire, but who knows when it's going to light again.
Exactly. I'm not sure if it's, you called it retrospective. We call it postmortem.
Postmortem. I think it's the same thing.
Okay, cool. It's good that everyone call it like that. But that's also another thing that I'm saying, that if the incident wasn't critical enough, and there is no need to do a postmortem, still do a postmortem with yourself. Do a retrospective with yourself to understand what you could have done better.
If you take any action of any kind, you should have a postmortem. You really should be sitting down and going, well, what happened? And, you know, is this likely to be repeatable? Is this like truly just a cosmic ray event? And it's, you know, we never know if it'll ever happen again.
Yeah. But
there's so many little recurring things that creep into any system with any complexity that we tend to ignore.
Yeah, because it takes a minute to fix.
It's a minute to fix and it's going to be hours to actually describe what happened.
Yeah.
And when you say runbook, like I've usually thought about runbooks as like this is the runbook for a deployment, that sort of thing. But you actually build up a runbook for an incident.
Yeah.
So what's in it?
So for example, if there is a runbook for fixing stuff with a database.
Mm-hmm.
So not all of us are DB ops or DBAs, right? And we still need to do stuff and not just wake up the person that usually do the heavy lifting of the DB stuff in the day.
I'm sorry, that was my favorite part, was waking those people up.
but you know, if I could prevent, waking up someone, I prefer to do it. So I had some stuff with MemSQL. So there were issues with the disk space. So we created a runbook for that, like how to clear space on disks that belong to MemSQL, stuff with the leaves and stuff like that, because it works with leaves.
You could segment that piece of the incident out and say, hey, anytime we need to shrink space to make it more available, this is how you do it.
Yeah. And we used it a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
You gamed a power that day. Knowing how to do those things.
Definitely.
But ultimately, I mean, adding to those kinds of runbooks means I don't need to call someone to do this.
Yeah.
Like we were able to do it ourselves in a relatively safe way.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of runbooks or playbooks, whatever you want to call it, is to be as independent as you can.
Yeah.
And there are some stuff that needs more judgment, you know, like, if this happens, let's do X. But if this and this happens, maybe we need to check this and this and that.
Yeah, go somewhere
So else. Runbooks is not only for stuff that you can do all the time, but also if you need to have judgment call, then you can structure it in that runbook and then people can read it. And based on the scenario, on specific thing that they ran into, then they can do whatever it says.
The big assessment that I went back in the day, because I've been doing this entirely long, was do we fail over? Like we have a backup site. It's supposed to be hot, warm, at least warm, if not hot, but it has not been failed over automatically too, but we're having these problems. Do we think a failover would make the situation better or worse?
Mm-hmm. And is it too much to fail over just for that?
Just for this. And I feel like the failover model is less common these days. We're better at fixing things. it's rarely hardware failures anymore because everything's virtualized. We can shuffle it around. Like that was my usual reason for failing over was that hardware is out and we're not going to be able to fix it from here.
Yeah.
Let's get over a site that's running so that we can get into the data center and do the work. But that's just cloud takes that problem away.
Yeah. So I can, in Wix, I work for Wix. Mm-hmm. So in Wix, we do have a couple of data centers. I'm not in production team. I'm in the data engineering group. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in the decision making of when we do the failovers, but for sure, whenever we have like, heavy maintenance on one data center, then we move the workload. And I'm sure that there are other scenarios that are very, there's definition on when to do the failovers.
Yeah.
So when you have a scenario of different data centers, you have gotta have guidelines on when are we doing the failover.
What's the threshold?
Yeah.
And also having confidence in doing it.
Yeah.
And Hila, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
No problem.
This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects called 2 Weeks Ready helps individuals, families, and communities prepare for disasters using smartphones. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. Your donations help support the creation of this life-saving software. Thanks.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Hila Fish. We're talking a little bit about incident management. I've told this story before on other show at other times, but I used to do some work for a financial group where we built symmetrical data centers in different countries. Mm-hmm. And the failover was such a dramatic thing when I first got involved that like all the best people would show up. They would only do it once in a while. And there was this real concern. It's like, if this ever happens in the middle of the night, like what's going to happen? And the answer was that we failed over every month.
Okay.
Because it just became routine. And the point would be that eventually the rock stars stopped showing up because it wasn't interesting. And so everybody got practice.
That's good.
And now that to me was the biggest challenge is most of the time when you're going to do tests or trials or anything like that, all the most experienced people show up and work on it. And so it usually goes well. And that's not when incidents happen.
I'm sorry for the people at home listening that they couldn't see my face right now. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Really, a good incident management mm-hmm. is one that can be handled by anyone and not only by the rock stars that the team has. And if a company only sends the rock stars to fix issues every time, mm-hmm. then it will create so much of a bottleneck. It will create discouragement of the other people that, oh, never mind. I'm not going to even try because they will fix
it. Don't worry. The rock stars will be here soon enough.
Yeah. And and then they will be less, professionals, less motivated to do stuff because, I'm not important here.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of bad side effects from this kind of culture. And I would definitely call it a culture.
Sure.
So
yeah, you definitely have some personalities involved there too, inevitably, but at the same time, you don't want to push away those people. But I think it's, if you've got some responsibility here, it's like, I want every shift to be capable of resolving every incident.
Right. But the rock stars should be the one to oversee everything mm-hmm. and not just let me do it. Yeah. They should oversee and just guide the people.
Yeah.
Because this will be the most helpful thing they could do, in my opinion.
To empower everyone.
Yeah.
The other problem I run into with incident teams often is loudest voices often win, even if they're wrong.
That's the issue. This is like cross culture, I think.
Yeah.
It's like no matter where you are, if you are the loudest, it means that you are.
You got righteousness right
there. Yeah.
Because you're loud. And
personally, I hate it.
Yeah.
Of course, I can't speak for all women out there, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of women I know that speak in a small voice,
yep.
but they are the most, they say the right things and the things that you need to consider. And because they're saying it in a low voice, then they are not really being
often
heard.
Missed. Yeah. When I got more senior was the path wasn't obvious. We didn't know which book to lose to sort of stop and look around the room at everyone's faces
mm-hmm.
and who's the person here who we haven't heard yet. that nice. Might know something, nice. Right? And just like, let's, everybody's voice has to be in here. Like, where are you at? And I think it takes a lot of nerve to say, I'm lost too, guys. Like, I don't know.
That's actually one of the qualities I also mentioned in the talk. Like, mm-hmm. be humble.
Yeah.
If you're stuck, ask for help.
Yeah.
You have a lot of other opportunities at work to shine. Your time to shine is not doing an incident like, I'll be the hero and I will save the day.
Yeah.
Your time to shine is that if you're stuck, if you don't know what to do, ask for help, escalate. It will help the business because we all need to have the business mindset, mm-hmm. you know, and the business interest in heart. So this will help everyone. Just yeah. say, I don't know. Let's ask someone that might know.
Yeah. Every voice is important here. Like, let's get ideas on the table.
Exactly.
Sometimes they're obvious. Sometimes, you know, if you can get to the run book you need, mm-hmm. You've got a good sense that that's the path to go on. And at least you're acting, but there's that moment where it's like, what did you say? That's a lot of warnings. That's a lot of,
yeah.
And I get that. Like, wow, look at all those events. That's a lot of criticals.
It is because, I mean, sometimes that's the thing. I also mentioned it as like being a impromptu action taker. Mm-hmm. So sometimes an incident that you will face is something that you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it will be something that it's in an uncharted territory.
Sure.
And that's okay. But if you have like the go-to approach and you'll know, okay, I don't know what to do, but maybe I'll talk to him. Maybe I'll check that incident run book that is similar and it will create some ideas for me. But if you just need to be in the inertia of doing something.
Yeah.
And then things will start to happen and not just, okay, let's.
If I stare at this log long enough, maybe something will come out of it.
Definitely.
Now, I've been there, right? But and often so many of these warnings and things are symptoms of the problem, yeah. not the problem.
Yeah. Right?
I do tend to go back in the log. It's like, when did the first thing happen? That may not be it, but at least gives you the beginning of the chain of what was upset first and where
for
it,
sure,
that goes.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I don't know if we really haven't talked about the tooling on this side, but, you know, do you have preferred ways to view into a system?
Not really, because as also an AWS CTO said, everything fails mm-hmm. all the time. Even the systems that's supposed to tell us that something is wrong,
yep.
they fail as well. So it's not really, it doesn't really matter which tool that you would use because it will fail as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in my experience, I usually use for the application that alerts us, we use the PagerDuty or OpsGenie. Mm-hmm. For monitoring, I mostly use Prometheus and Grafana, but you know, they do the trick. They alert us as needed.
Yep. So there's no one perfect tool. And I appreciate that sentiment.
Yeah,
right?
There is.
The biggest thing for me has always been, it's a tool you actually know how to use.
Yeah. I mean, if you find yourself in a position where the tool is like an obscure kind of thing that you're not sure what to do with it, then you're probably over in your head and you need more guidance and more hands-on mm-hmm. with this tool.
Yeah. And that's a good question to ask too. It's like, how do I read this?
Yeah.
What is this trying to tell me?
But actually, this is something that was raised throughout the conference these days, is that some people or a lot of people, I think it's a cultural thing. Like, since we were kids, we were taught not to ask questions because we will appear as stupid or not knowledgeable enough. So, and then people don't ask questions. And this is not good.
Yeah.
You know, we need to ask questions. It's okay not to know everything. It's okay.
Yeah. It's really okay. And especially in incident management, I found working out loud is really important there. It helps with the document chain.
Right.
And again, like using chat channels and things like that, where you had to communicate mm-hmm. effectively made you work out loud. Where when we were all in a room together, you do have some folks that are more studious.
Yeah.
But then you don't, then they say, what about this? It's like, you got to tell me how you got there. Like,
yeah.
Show, that's the old smart person thing. You know how much we hated showing our work in math class? It's like all of this stuff, you really need to show your work. Like it's an important part of giving people understanding and giving hints to the possible problem.
That's what I say about postmortem, that even if you don't need to do a postmortem meeting, then share the knowledge anyway, because people can benefit from your line of thought, how you debugged stuff. You will explain the flow. People will learn from it. So this kind of knowledge is very, very important for everyone.
Yeah. So doing more documentation around the incidents And then the other one I found is then showing this the forms of this same incident keep showing up. Like, incidents could also be a manifestation of technical debt.
Yeah.
And being able to assess that this is the debt that should be retired, like, we have that information. If we're incident managing, we're not feeding it back.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's good mechanisms for that still.
Nope. Not that I'm aware of, actually. Yeah. I mean, I do know, I'm from Israel, so mm-hmm. I noticed there's a new, not a new, I don't know if they're new or not, but there's a company called Swim,
mm-hmm.
and they have a tool, Swim with double M, and they have a tool for documentation. So maybe
right.
one feature is handling this mechanism. Maybe right. I haven't noticed, checked it myself. So.
But it's thinking the retrospective or the, you know, the postmortem is, How should we change the product to decrease this? Or how does it become a work item for at the developer level to say, hey, you know, this is costing us money routinely. It's worth fixing.
I actually talked with someone here at the conference about that. He was head of support for production for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he just started in order to show the business that this is worthwhile investing in to fix and mm-hmm. not just invest only in shiny new things and right. new features. He just documented everything that happened. Like, this recurring issue happened. He worked on that for X hours and then he showed the statistics. And then they actually saw what is the effect when they don't fix it.
Yeah.
So, and you know, business and people and civil levels like numbers and like statistics. So when they see the numbers in action, then they understood.
This is something you could get from the Jira ticketing system, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you make Jira tickets for people calling you for tech support, things like that, but having tickets tagged as incidents
mm-hmm.
and then doing analysis on those tickets to show here's the recurring thing.
Yeah.
You know, happening over and over and yeah, over again and to get priority to the product managers.
And then if you actually measure it.
Yeah.
And show it to the right people.
Yeah.
Then they will say, okay, this is worthwhile investing. Okay.
Right. And you take it to the next level. They do the work, improve the app, and then we show incidences related to these mechanisms went from every day to once a month
right.
or not at all. Like,
that's awesome because eventually it also helps it helps everyone. It helps mm-hmm. the employees to not being burned out. It helps the users not experience issues because these kind of things can affect them even if in a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But still, every time the user goes and say, this again. It's yeah. not a user, it's good user experience.
Yeah, eventually that user gets to experience and says, I can't do this task without having to call in.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to avoid doing this task as long as possible, or because I got to block out 2 hours to start the task, create the problem, get on the phone, you know, and go through incidents.
Exactly. And which product wants that?
Yeah.
You know,
it's not good. But the other thing, like you talk about the burnout part, if you're just fighting fires every day, it gets very old. The idea that you at some point can say, hey, remember this fire you've been fighting routinely for the past 3 months? Well, we've now got a sprint completed that's going to try and mitigate that.
Mm-hmm.
Just to know that people are listening to you
yeah.
and trying to make your work better.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty powerful thing. I think I want to write a book called DevOps, When to Throw the Party. Right. And one of them is when incident management gets a work item through the dev that actually makes the incident management life better. It's a good time to throw a party.
It is. It is. And it's a good title as well.
Yeah. So. Or at least when to have the beer.
Yeah.
Like, we should all have a drink now. You know, the new feature's out and we've measured people's using it. Now it's time for a drink.
Definitely.
Definitely getting all the way through that loop of incident management is also a source of knowledge about our applications, not just firefighters.
Yeah. And that's when I explain about the structured process or the structured mm-hmm. Framework, how to manage an incident, I show 5 pillars and I say that the last pillar is the incident closure. So mm-hmm. yeah, you still have stuff to do even when the incident gets closed.
Yeah.
It's not when issue is done, then you're done. No, there are stuff to do.
Yeah.
So
that's in my mind, that's retrospective. You call postmortem, but
yeah,
just because the light is green now,
yeah,
not done.
But more than that, it's retrospective. It's creating a new tasks that will help stabilize the environment mm-hmm. or prevent new incidents. It's making sure all parties were notified that the issue is done and everything should get back to normal.
Right.
It's making sure that, like even again, if postmortem wasn't needed, doing the retrospective with yourself, making sure that you did whatever possible, or you could
documenting it, categorize, you know, putting it in a place.
Updating run books.
Yep.
It's also on incident closure. Alerts fixing, if there was a false positive or not, fix that. So a lot of things needs to be done also when the incident got closed, because that's the momentum, you know, you have the momentum that you remember
and all the stuff's in your head right now.
Yeah.
Like the longer you wait, the less you'll remember about
exactly.
it. Exactly. And you'll basically force us to do it again just to get better at it.
And then you, waste more time and you know.
Yeah. It's all pretty positive stuff. We don't often include the incident management folks in the DevOps conversation. And yet it's talking to you, it's absolutely clear. Like they should be part of it. Normally they're ops. So naturally they're involved, but the incident workers are the guys who don't always see that.
Actually, in my experience, we always were the one to do the incident management. We didn't have other people that doing it for us.
I mean,
unless you mean like different tiers, but usually the ones that actually managed the incidents were the ones that did the deployments to production.
Right.
Because you can't expect someone to do the deployment and then, okay, that's it. I'm done.
I'm good. Oh, is it on fire? Yeah, you guys could figure that
out. Yeah, I did the change, but.
Well, near hinting at the reality, of course, which is the most common incidences that we see are right after deployment.
I actually had one at work. Like I still remember it. It was 12 years ago. And I still remember it. We were, you know, back before Corona times. So we were all in the office.
In the before times.
Yeah. In the before times. We were in the office 5:30 PM.
Not on Friday.
Not on Friday. Actually, in Israel, it's Thursday.
Thursday, of course. Yes.
Yeah. But not on Thursday.
Right.
But still 5:30, it is somewhat end of the day. My team member said, okay, I finished the deployment. Bye. And I'm like, wait, did you alerted the NOC? Because NOC teams are the ones
right.
that back then had all the screens to notify if there are issues. Like,
yeah.
So did you tell NOC? And he said, yeah.
They'll figure it out.
And then listen, like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes after he was gone.
The NOC, phones are all ringing.
Not what phone? They came to my office to the door and said,
what have you done?
Service X is down. I'm like, it's the same service he did the
deployment. Just to deploy on.
Okay, cool. Who will fix it? Of course, me.
Yeah, because you're still there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it happens.
Yeah. If you deploy on a 5:30, you're not allowed to leave till 6.
That's what I said. That's what I said.
Exactly that. You know, you have to stay in place. Just, you know, before you go swimming.
End to end handling.
Yeah.
Make sure that what you did is okay.
Yeah. And that's an Olagian Cockcroft line too, right? It's like when we had the developers fix the problems they made, we had a lot fewer problems.
Yeah.
Like if you stay involved, you know, own the whole problem, it's really powerful. Hila, it's so great to talk to you. Really appreciate that. It's fun to talk to somebody who's been in the trenches on this stuff. And I hope it was useful for everyone. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.